Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the Wednesday edition of a week that I think America will long look back upon and reflect upon. Is this the country we intended to be? Yes, we are in a moment where a drive-by impeachment is literally going on, a one-day impeachment of a president. There doesn't seem to be any evidence that will be introduced, any witnesses that will really be explored. We won't know the real underlying evidence that led to this impeachment if it continues on its one-day course drive-by nature. But that is what is going on in Washington today. We're covering it stem to stern here at Just the News. And I want to mention to you one story. But before I get to that, I want to tell you about today's guest. Joel Griffith from the Heritage Foundation is joining us. He is one of the brightest voices, a man who speaks with such sincerity, with such passion, but always with dignity. There's none of that anger, none of that swagger, none of that insult that so much dominates talk television, talk radio these days. This is a guy that has his data, his issues, and his beliefs together, and he speaks with passion and energy. He's absolutely delightful. I've heard him many times. I'm so excited to get him on the show today. But he never demeans. He never needs to say a crossword. He never needs to embarrass the other side. He talks with dignity, facts, passion, and he does it in a way that I love. And the Heritage Foundation's done something that I think is one of the great visual exercises. If we were in an era of journalism, we'd call this journalism. But as you know, most of my colleagues have died and pursued some other profession called propaganda. But Heritage went about and he went to all the communities where government officials put together a regulatory regime, restrictions on everyday Americans to protect them, allegedly, from COVID. And then the elected leaders in those jurisdictions, in those cities and counties and states, did not follow their own rules. They were caught cheating on the very rules they imposed on us. You know, we know about Gavin Newsom. We know about Speaker Pelosi and her famous hairdo that, you know, broke the rules. We can go to, you know, the Cuomos in New York. We can go around. But they have found four or five dozen really compelling examples of local officials who own a restaurant and cheat that are flouting and violating the very rules they're imposing on America. And I think it that double standard, that hypocrisy, Joel's going to be here to talk about it. We're going to illuminate it. We're going to call out some officials who deserve to be in a polite, factual way, the way we always do at Just the News. But you're not going to want to miss this segment. I think he is one of the great voices in the conservative space today, the think tank space. We try to give you lots of different people to talk to here, and I think you're going to like today. It's a little off topic from the impeachment, but I think you're probably getting drowned by impeachment and doom and gloom and all the silliness that is going on in Washington. So I thought a more rational voice about an issue that's going to long linger past this momentary strife in Washington is going to be fun. So you're going to get to hear from Joel in a second. But before we go to the break, I want to point out one story I wrote today. I think it's very important. Last night, I previewed one of my stories, the failure thus far of President Trump to deliver on one of his biggest promises that isn't yet done, and that is declassification of the Russia and Ukraine evidence. My goodness, there has been a failure there. But I can tell you with absolute certainty that we will not stop fighting for that information to the last minute and hour that Donald Trump is in the White House. And then if he leaves, we'll continue to pursue these legal lawsuits to force this information. I know what documents need to be put out there. I made a list of 40. It's up on the website today. Go check that out. The 40 most important pieces of information still kept secret in the Ukraine-Russia scandals. We'll use the lawsuits if we have to. I still hope that the president won't forget the promises he made to me in interviews and to the American people on Twitter that he was going to declassify everything. Mark Meadows, Pat Cipollone, President Donald Trump, you can still do this. There's still 5.5 days of your term left. Make a difference and release these documents for the American people. I'm not doing it as an advocate for myself or for my organization. I'm doing it on behalf of the American people. But the story I really want to point out, because we kind of teased that and let you know that was coming, and I'm going to be on Lou Dobbs tonight talking about it. But the story I wanted to talk about is the three most important unanswered questions about the Capitol siege. Listen, there was horrific violence by horrible people who conducted terrible, terrible acts of violence, hitting a police officer over the head with a fire extinguisher. That isn't conservative. That isn't liberal. That isn't activism. That is felonious behavior. Could be punished by capital punishment in my mind, but what a horrific, horrific set of behavior. I'm not condoning that, but listen, there are some pretty significant unanswered questions that exist, particularly now that we're learning about what the FBI knew, what the NYPD warned about, what was floating around in the intelligence community. I want you to just go check the story out. I won't spend a lot of time now deviating. I just want to point out a couple of things. No one has asked Nancy Pelosi what she and her staff knew from the House Sergeant of Arms. We're working on that here at Just the News, but we don't know what Nancy Pelosi knew and when she knew it. We know the police chief went to her security chief, the House Sergeant at Arms, a guy named Irving, and told him he needed National Guard troops, large numbers of them, 2-3 days before the protest began, and he was turned down because the House Sergeant at Arms said the powers that be were worried about the optics. Are those powers to be Nancy Pelosi or Steny Hoyer or Kevin McCarthy? We don't know. We need to find that out. If we're going to assign blame for what happened, we need to know what the leaders in Congress, the people who control the security in Congress, did, knew, forgot, failed to do, did do, were turned down, denied. We don't know that. And the fact that we're moving into an impeachment, assigning full blame to Donald Trump without knowing that is a big hole in the public space. It's just like the holes we had when everybody was telling us the day after 9/11, we were sucker punched. We didn't see this coming when, in fact, the FBI and CIA had most of the plot. They just didn't connect the dots. Big failure of intelligence. I suspect there's something here in Congress on that. Here's another big development. Yesterday, the U.S. attorney and sources of mine at the FBI and the assistant director for the FBI in the Washington field office all confirmed that they believe that the acts that occurred on Wednesday, January 6th, in the siege of the Capitol were part of a conspiracy that was carried out over many days. It was pre-planned. How do we know that? They're charging people with making sophisticated explosives. That didn't happen on the fly. They were made in advance and planted in places. There were maps, we're told, being held out. We hear from Congressman Clyburn, one of the great respected Democrats, number three Democrat in the House, that he believes there was insider help. That is a conspiracy that would have occurred several days before. There was planning, according to the FBI. There were warnings on social media and on bulletin boards and on messenger apps that this was going to happen. So I ask you, how could it be that the president invoked a spontaneous riot that had already been planned by perpetrators days and weeks in advance? That is a question that remains unanswered. Maybe the president deserves some blame. I don't know yet. But without the factual basis, this drive-by shooting today is missing a very important point to illuminate the truth. If the truth warrants actions by Congress, then it should happen. But we are flying without the majority of the facts or truth. And just remember, it wasn't that long ago where another riot was, we were told, was spontaneous, instantaneous. Remember Benghazi, the four men that died there, including our brave ambassador? Well, we were originally told that was a spontaneous riot by local citizens who were outraged by an anti-Muslim video. What did we find out? That was sold to us by who? None other than Susan Rice, who's coming back into the Biden administration. We later found out it was a planned terror attack, planned days and weeks in advance. We ought to take that lesson and say, hey, until we find out all the facts on this, let's not make assumptions that this was a spontaneous combustible riot. It appears that there was some planning by some people. We need to know who those are. So I go through the three questions. There's also the insider help question. Take a look at that story. It's getting a lot of traction today. A lot of people are talking about it. It's one of the sort of investigative journalism and thought pieces we like to do. We're not trying to make up your mind. We're trying to give you facts and let you make up your own mind. There are three very important questions that remain unanswered factually at this point. Check it out. All right, we're going to go to that commercial break when we come back. Yes, Joel Griffith, you're going to love this guy from the Heritage Foundation. Smart, passionate, diplomatic. You're going to learn a lot. And we want to talk about this database, the interactive map of hypocritical COVID regulations. yes, government officials didn't follow the very regulations they imposed on their people. You got to check that out. And we'll be right back with Joel Griffith right now after this commercial break. Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down. My blood sugar is down. My weight's down. My health is up. My sleeping patterns are better. My metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest joining us from the Heritage Foundation today is Joel Griffith. And he's been part of a project that I think is one of the most important things I've seen at the beginning of this new year. The construction of a map and database showing the many places in America where government imposed restrictions on everyday Americans. And then their political leaders, well, they flouted them themselves. Joel, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me today.
It's an honor to have you on. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration for this project. I think it's just it's a thing that journalists used to do. I'm so glad the Heritage Foundation did it. But tell us what inspired you to do it and what you found.
Well, a lot of us at Heritage and my colleagues, we have been, of course, personally impacted by the shutdowns, as have all of us. And over time, just noticed so many stories of county commissioners, governors, mayors, judges that have pushed onerous restrictions, some of them unconstitutional, on the citizens of their communities. And yet, when the cameras are off, or when they think the cameras are off, they're actually engaging in the very behavior that they're telling us to refrain from. And we're not talking about bad behavior per se. We're talking about things like going to dinner, having a family get together, going to a party or on a vacation. And there's repeatedly from coast to coast told us not to do these things, and yet they have. Now, I think one of the biggest examples that comes to mind is the state of California, where once again, the state's under a nearly statewide shutdown. You can't even get a bite to eat in most restaurants without the running criminal penalties. But yet, think back to a few months ago when the state assembly met. All the freshman legislators got together and they took a picture, and they were all socially distanced for the cameras. And then what did they do after? They all went to dinner together, non-socially distanced. And there's nothing wrong with going to dinner. Don't get me wrong. It's just that these politicians are telling us we can't do it, but yet they're doing it the moment they think the cameras are put away.
So give us a sense of just the scope of this hypocrisy, this double standard, this two ways of living, one for the department of us and the rest for the rest of the world. How many instances have you been able to document of officials not following their own restrictions?
Now, there are many dozens. I think we have about 4 dozen that we opposed to, some of the most egregious ones. But here's actually one from my old neighborhood in Lakeview, Wrigleyville, Chicago. Alderman Tunney, owns some restaurants. There's a lot of nice little cafes in Chicago.
Sure.
And those have all been shuttered indoors. But guess what? His restaurant was allowing indoor dining at a restaurant that he owns for a few of their favorite customers. And they didn't stop until they got caught. And once again, I'm all for having a bite to eat and a coffee indoors.
Right.
But in this situation, this is an alderman who the alderman, which is the city council there, and the mayor, they've shuttered these businesses, but yet he kept his open. And that is just so So wrong.
Oh my gosh.
Think of Dr. Deborah Birx, fine doctor. She's been advising the administration and communities on COVID and was telling people, don't get together for Thanksgiving dinners. Don't get together for Christmas. Put all of this off. And what did she do? She actually went to her Delaware vacation home with numerous other family households. And there's nothing wrong with getting together with family. I got together with, I think, 6 households in my extended family for Thanksgiving. But I'm not out there telling people, stay home and don't get together with your
family. That's right.
She was. And yet she did that when it came to her own life.
There's the obvious political consequence of this, the hypocrisy issue, the shaming. But there's also another question constitutionally, which is there supposed to be equal protection, equal treatment under the law. Have any of these instances that you've documented resulted in any lawsuits or any claims by people that we created two classes of citizens, one, the privileged and entitled in government, and those the rest of us in average America? Any sense that this is going to lead to litigation or challenges anywhere in the places where you've documented it?
I don't know of any litigation based on that, although that's an excellent question. And certainly we have a de facto situation in which people are trying to set laws that they aren't applying to themselves. But on the surface, the law does apply to everyone. I think what we are seeing in a lot of states are a number of successful lawsuits, both by private parties, but also by state legislators trying to block some of these emergency shutdown orders. We've seen victories in Wisconsin. We've seen victories in the state of Michigan. We've actually seen victories in the Supreme Court against some of these orders in places like New York that have prohibited religious assembly, where you've got religious assembly prohibited, but yet you've got other types of assembly that are prohibited, whether commercial or protests that are supported by the left-wing government. So I think it's very important that we as private citizens challenge where warranted these unconstitutional orders. This is really fraying on people's, it's not just a business matter, although businesses are suffering and going under because of this.
Sure.
It's also a matter of our civic communities, our faith communities being frayed, relationships that are going backwards because we're not able to communicate with each other face-to-face. And of course, just that very necessary human interaction. This is really weighing on people spiritually, emotionally, psychologically. And I think we should be pushing back peacefully, of course, where warranted. And we can do this through the courts. We're seeing success across the country in the courts on this.
Yeah, listen, the New York ruling that you mentioned, which came down, ironically, on Thanksgiving Eve, I was around about midnight and wrote the story for Just the News. But, you know, that is a landmark ruling against Governor Cuomo and his COVID religious restrictions. And one of the justices wrote, and I can't remember who it was, I think it was Gorsuch, wrote this eloquent thing, which is, we don't get to suspend the Constitution just because we have a pandemic. And I think so much of what you're documenting is the folly of having two classes of citizens, two classes of behavior. I'm curious, because now it's got out in there for a while, it's gotten a lot of attention, we've written about it, many other people have written about it, I've seen it on TV. What's been the reaction to the map, to the database? What do you hear from everyday Americans about this?
I think they're outraged. And a lot of these stories haven't received national attention. And I think it cements into place what a lot of people intuitively know, that these restrictions, they might have been well-intended early on.
Right.
But there comes a point where it's actually not just about health. We've seen states such as Florida that have reopened almost nearly completely, and they're faring much better than places like New York. And I think we're getting the sense that oftentimes politicians are actually reluctant to admit that they made a mistake.
Yeah,
it is embarrassing,
for sure.
But you've got people's lives on the line, their community lives on the line. And I think now when you see what's happening in New York, where you have Governor Cuomo finally, better late than never, admitting we can't stay closed forever, even though the vaccines aren't fully distributed. He's saying we're going to have nothing left to reopen, and it's better to admit you're wrong a little late than never do it at all, especially when other people's livelihoods and lives are on the line.
Now, some of this sentiment, this furor, I mean, that's the wrong word for it, but the disappointment, frustration, anger at our politicians is starting to mobilize into action. In California, where this state has essentially been locked down since March. I mean, I suppose there were some moments where people got a little fresh air, but it's essentially been locked down since March. And then the governor himself caught breaking his own rules There's a recall movement going on. I think it's more than a million signatures. So they're 2/3 of the way from recalling Gavin Newsom as governor. Do you think there will be other political movements as you study this, you know, as a person looking at it? Does this lead to, you know, just an expression of outrage, or are there political movements and solutions that you think are forthcoming here?
Oh, yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned California. There are some peaceful movements underway to actually push back. If you go to my old neighborhood, which is Southern Orange County by Newport Beach, many of those restaurants actually are opening, and bars, indoors even. And that's because the community has decided, the businesses, they need to open to survive. And the county sheriff is not enforcing the full breadth of Newsom shutdown orders. You go to San Diego, a similar thing is happening where restaurants and bars got together, and many of them anyway, and said they're not going to comply with this latest round of full shutdowns. And you've seen much success at that. I've got a number of friends that live out there that are enjoying at least a quasi return to freedom, a basic ability just to go out with your friends and family for even a bite to eat. So we are seeing that in communities across the country. You see Florida, where the governor DeSantis has largely reopened the state and has put restrictions on the ability of counties and mayors to enact new shutdowns. And some of the mayors aren't too happy with that, but guess what? The community certainly are. And if you go ahead and take a visit and you see people that are re-engaged in life and they're out living their lives.
And they're doing it safely, right? They're wearing masks, they're doing social distancing, they're doing the things they need to, but they didn't have to be cloistered. I think that's the lesson.
Yes.
I have a funny feeling when history looks back, Florida versus California is a case study in not only regulatory fiat in medical practice, but also, you know, I saw Governor DeSantis yesterday. I think he was at the Villages out in Central Florida, and he had a plan to get shots out faster than any other state has been able to implement it. There's a lot of innovation and a lot of confidence that, you know, government, when practiced right, can do right things, right? It can do the things right. I just imagine when we look statistically that California and Florida will be the polar opposites in the stories of this pandemic. Do you see other states where we've been able to preserve liberty and freedom and yet protect the American public? Because we all want to be protected. We're not asking to be reckless here. Any other states that pop out as you look at the map and the differences in hypocrisy, policy, and implementation?
Sure. Now, I think Georgia has done a fine job. Governor Kemp has ensured that even places like Atlanta, there are limitations on the type of restrictions that the mayor can put in place.
Right.
And they're now getting the vaccine out. We've seen this in South Carolina, which, of course, went through an initial shutdown early in the year, but they very quickly opened back up their communities, of course, with basic precautions in place. But you can have basic safety precautions without forcing large sectors of the economy to close. We've seen Texas as well. I think Governor Abbott is doing what he can relative to at least other states in the Southwest to keep as much of Texas open and to keep much of it open, despite the fact that you have mayors in places like Austin that are trying to put onerous restrictions on people. There are a lot of examples of states that have done far better than places like New York and California. Of course, what happened in New York is just a travesty beyond the shutdown.
Yeah.
If you look at
they did not
actually protect the vulnerable.
Yeah.
Governor Cuomo was requiring assisted living centers to take in people that knowingly had COVID. They were positive. And so many lives of the vulnerable and a lot of elderly individuals were lost. And needlessly, it's very sad. Then you see a place like Florida where they're prioritizing immediately those that are at high risk to get these vaccinations. It's really night and day.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, there's been a playbook in Washington and in the states for many years that if a pandemic struck, that you let the healthy with the proper restrictions and protections get out, and you protect the vulnerable. And it seems as though our public health officials, both at the state level and some at the federal level, actually did the opposite. They sent the sick to the vulnerable, and they locked up the potentially healthy or least likely to be seriously infected. There's got to be a learning moment from this pandemic, and it doesn't seem like those in Washington really want to learn from it. They want to cast aspersions and point fingers, but somewhere along the way. And I think that's why Heritage exists, right? You guys study and you bring thought and you bring analysis to the data and you make sense of this craziness. We're so lucky to have you. What are some of the other fun things going on at Heritage? I'll tell you a great story. I came to Washington in 1990, right at the beginning. I think my first day on the job at the Associated Press was the day that the Clarence Thomas hearing started in 1990. And my boss said, listen, you're on your own. We're too busy here. So go out and meet some people. So I started to make some calls and I met some incredible people at Heritage and I came over. I got to meet Ed Meese, the former attorney general. And for the last 30 years of my career, time and time again, I've turned to Heritage for data and research and expertise. You guys have such an amazing base of information, analysts, experts. And even though you come with a perspective of your freedom and conservatism, you're very transparent about your data, right? You're not trying to hijack the data. You're doing sort of thing. What are some of the other fun things that Heritage is doing today to inform and help the American public learn through these very turbulent times?
Well, we're doing a lot on the budget side, and it's something that a lot of people left wing and right wing have ignored for years now. Going back more than just the last four, going back for decades, and we're really trying to help people visualize and help people understand the negative long term repercussions of continuing these imprudent spending policies. And I think it's really come to a boiling point this year as so many of us are, so many Americans are receiving free money in their checking accounts. Yeah. And there's not a lot of understanding about how that will actually impact our future. I think we're starting to see that with some of the uptick in prices. Maybe people are getting a sense of it. By and large, I think businesses are enjoying this sugar high, as are people's checking accounts. But we need to keep to really educate individuals about the necessity of reining in the spending, doing it before we end up in a crisis like we've seen across parts of Europe.
Of course.
And even if we don't have a complete meltdown like we've seen across parts of South America, we can suffer from sluggish growth for decades to come if are not careful. We've seen the value of our dollar plunge by more than 15% just in the past 6 or 7 months.
It's amazing.
Largely as a result from the fiscal imprudence. So that's going to be something we're going to have our eye on. That's not a Republican or Democrat issue. That's an issue that politicians of both parties are responsible for and are going to have to come together to resolve.
I walk by the city, and for many, many years, there's been signs up that the Pete Peterson Foundation and other foundations will put up just to call attention to the deficit. And when I first came to town, the national debt was about 9-10 trillion. And today I walk by a sign that said 28 trillion. That level of debt growth is jaw-dropping. And I wonder why the American people, have we just become numb to big numbers?
Well,
what do you think the lack of attention? We used to hold our leaders accountable, right? In fact, we had a balanced budget less than 20 years ago.
I think one of the things that plays that we've seen so much benefit from the private sector and from the boom in technology and the benefits that we've seen both in terms of goods becoming more affordable and in terms of lives becoming easier, that's masked the impact of the over spending. And so it's a matter of we know our lives are actually modestly better now than they were a generation ago. But it's hard to understand, well, just how much better could it have been had we not had government sucking up so many of these new resources? And that's it's a tough battle to wage because it's easy to point out to a place like Venezuela that nationalized entire industries and expropriated private property, and you see so many millions of people unemployed. But we are a free society, and our government is too big, and we're taking on excess debt. But we are still growing, even if we're not growing as fast as we did in years past. And so it's really it is a struggle to really explain to people how much better things could be had we been making the better decisions when it comes to our national checkbook, if you will.
I remember senators when I got to town saying, we're spending your grandchildren's money right now. And now I think we're probably spending our great, 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 great grandchildren's money with the level of debt we're leaving behind. You talked about freedom, and I think of Heritage, and that's a word that just instantly comes to mind. All of the epic fights, all of the data, all of the studies to preserve freedom against many different threats, whether it was 9/11 or excessive spending over government regulation. The sudden censorship crowd has literally flipped politics on its head. Liberals, who used to be the champions of free speech, are now trying to justify this extraordinary crackdown on free expression, free speech in America that's being, you know, carried out by these oligarchs, these monopolies called Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And we all love their functionality. Listen, the software is great, right? We all got addicted to it. But now they're trying to control thought and expression. What is Herod? And then conservatives are fighting very hard to maintain these free speech platforms or to create new ones. As you look out, what is Herod see in this debate? And what are some of the possible solutions to, you know, the Facebook, Twitter, YouTube crackdown? The leader of the free world can't express himself right now on YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook. And we have countries like Germany and Latin America, even the Russian opposition, saying, we can't believe America's doing this. What's the solution? What do you see at Heritage?
Well, it's a matter of concern to many Americans, many conservatives, even some classical liberals, many classical liberals, that you see this drive to rein in speech and to censor ideas. Those solutions are hard to come by right now. You've seen what happened this past week with Parler, which has been an alternative to many individuals, that's been taken down for the time being. Amazon Web Services does not want, or has chosen not to host them. Thankfully, we do have other outlets, even though sometimes it's harder or it's not as convenient for people to get the news sources from it. But thankfully, we do have a free press, and we have abilities to gain our information from there and express ourselves on there. But certainly, we've come to rely upon social media networks to dispense information and also to receive it. So this is something that I think we're going to have to work through as a country, and hopefully those even on the other side of the political spectrum will come to gain a reappreciation for the way in which dialogue from divergent points of view is necessary for a free society to function properly.
It is so well said. I mean, you did such a great job really summing it. This is the essence of America. I mean, when you look at when the revolution was going on, what was our greatest weapon beyond the ragtag team of army we had? We had the free speech advocates, the Thomas Paines and the Ben Franklins and the Thomas Jeffersons, using their voice and that expression of freedom. And it seems as though an entire generation, I walk around, I have a lot of millennials working for me here at Just the News, but I walk around, I've been in college campuses, I talk, and there seems to be a disconnect that there's an entire generation of Americans that aren't connected to the actual ideas and passions and liberties that were at the forefront of the founding of America, the founding fathers, you know, who are such brilliant members. I guess we can't even use the word founding fathers on the floor of the speech anymore because the word fathers banned on the House floor, but the founding, whatever we're going to call them on the House floor. How do we connect? Do you think we're in an era where civics and our connection to our foundation of this country has been interrupted and maybe perhaps hijacked by a new philosophy? Do you say the same thing when you're studying this at Heritage?
Without a doubt, we see a lack of civics education with the younger generation. One of our scholars at Heritage, former scholars, Dr. David Azarat, used to do a first principles course for college students, college graduates, even for Hill staffers. First principles, and we're talking about the ideas upon which our nation is founded. What's the thought processes that went into our Constitution, the Bill of Rights? Where did those rights historically come from? This whole idea of the Bill of Rights themselves actually enshrining the rights that we have, not because the government gives them to us, but because of who we are as human beings, because of our creator, because of the basic rights of freedom of expression and thought and assembly. These are rights that are ours, regardless of whether or not a government even recognizes them. And we're fortunate to just live in a country where the government promises to protect those rights. But there's a lack of understanding of those basic concepts. If you look at some of the old textbooks from decades ago, back in the 40s and 50s, and you see what our high school students were learning, you can understand how and what has been lost as public schools, by and large, no longer teach those founding principles. We've lost a sense of what it actually means to be an American, what makes our country exceptional. And I think this is something too that because our public schools or in our universities aren't teaching this like they should be, it's incumbent upon folks like yourself that have a platform and folks like me that work at Heritage to share those timeless ideals.
Yeah, it's such a great point, and we gotta create a, I think a discussion in America to reconnect us to the civic origins of this incredible experiment that is the American experiment. Joel, I could listen to you all day, and I'll tell you what, we're gonna try to make you a regular on this show. Your grasp of knowledge, your grasp of the policy issues, and of course the incredible resources of Heritage are so refreshing and invigorating when you start to talk. Before I let you go, how do people follow you personally, and then how do they follow the great work of Heritage? Give us all the ways we can connect, at least as they're currently open on Twitter, Facebook, and other places.
Well, sure thing. I'm on Twitter at Joel Griffith. And if you go to Heritage, our website's easy to navigate. If you go to heritage.org, any issue that you want to explore from a conservative perspective, you can just enter the term in the search bar and you'll see a wealth of information. And most of us are easily reachable on Twitter or via email.
Oh, that's so great. We're blessed to have such great foundations and think tanks and organizations like Heritage on all sides of the political spectrum. And in this era where a lot of acerbic voices are out there, it's really nice to have a rational, passionate voice on the show and in the public space. So, Joel, thank you for the time and all that you're doing for all your great colleagues at the Heritage Foundation.
Thank you, and keep up the good work. Talk soon.
I will soon. Okay, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back and wrap up the day.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. I hope you enjoyed our guest. We'll be back tomorrow with more breaking news, new insights on one of the most turbulent weeks in recent history in this Washington District of Columbia where I work and follow news every day. We'll be back tomorrow. If you need a news fix, go to justthenews.com. We'll take good care of you. God bless you, and God bless America.